Chapter 21. Insinuations aforesaid, my interest had been greatly excited in the hero of the Bugaboo and Kickapoo campaign. However, the delightfully luminous conversation of Brevet Brigadier General John A.B. C. Smith soon completely dissipated this chagrin. My friend leaving us immediately, we had quite a long TTTT, and I was not only pleased but really instructed. I never heard a more fluent talker, or a man of greater general information. With becoming modesty, he forbore, nevertheless, to touch upon the theme I had just then most at heart, I mean the mysterious circumstances attending the Bugaboo War, and, on my own part, what I conceived to be a proper sense of delicacy forbade me to broach the subject, although, in truth, I was exceedingly tempted to do so. I perceived, too, that the gallant soldier preferred topics of philosophical interest, and that he delighted, especially, in commenting upon the rapid march of mechanical invention. Indeed, lead him where I would, this was a point to which he invariably came back. "Here is nothing at all like it," he would say. "We are a wonderful people, and live in a wonderful age. Parachutes and railroads, man traps and spring guns. Our steamboats are upon every sea, and the Nassau balloon packet is about to run regular trips, fare either way only £20 sterling, between London and Timbuktu. And who shall calculate the immense influence upon social life, upon arts, upon commerce, upon literature, which will be the immediate result of the great principles of electromagnetics? Nor, is this all, let me assure you. There is really no end to the march of invention. The most wonderful, the most ingenious, and let me add, Mr. Thompson, I believe, is your name, let me add, I say, the most useful, the most truly useful mechanical contrivances, are daily springing up like mushrooms, if I may so express myself, or, more figuratively, like our grasshoppers, like grasshoppers, Mr. Thompson about us, and around us, Thompson, to be sure, is not my name. But it is needless to say, that I left General Smith with a heightened interest in the man, with an exalted opinion of his conversational powers, and a deep sense of the valuable privileges we enjoy in living in this age of mechanical invention. My curiosity, however, had not been altogether satisfied, and I resolved to prosecute immediate inquiry among my acquaintances touching the Brevet Brigadier General himself, and particularly respecting the tremendous events quorum pars magnifuit during the Bugaboo and Kickapoo campaign. The first opportunity which presented itself, and which Caresco referenced, I did not in the least scruple to seize, occurred at the church of the Reverend Dr. Drumumup, where I found myself established, one Sunday, just at sermon time, not only in the pew, but by the side, of that worthy and communicative little friend of mine, Miss Tabitha T. Thus seated, I congratulated myself, and with much reason, upon the very flattering state of affairs. If any person knew anything about Brevet Brigadier General John A.B. C. Smith, that person, it was clear to me, was Miss Tabitha T. We telegraphed a few signals, and then commenced, sotto voce, a brisk TTTT. "Smith," said she, in reply to my very earnest inquiry, "Smith!" exclamation point Y, not General John A. B. C. Bless me, I thought you knew all about him. This is a wonderfully inventive age. Horrid affair that. A bloody set of wretches, those Kickapoos. Fought like a hero, prodigies of valor, immortal renown. Smith. Brevet Brigadier General John A. B. C. Why, you know he's the man, and here broke in Dr. Drumumup, at the top of his voice, and with a thump that came near knocking the pulpit about our ears. Man that is born of a woman hath but a short time to live. He cometh up, and is cut down like a flower. I started to the extremity of the pew, and perceived by the animated looks of the divine, that the wrath which had nearly proved fatal to the pulpit, had been excited by the whispers of the lady and myself. There was no help for it, so I submitted with a good grace, and listened, in all the martyrdom of dignified silence, to the balance of that very capital discourse. Next evening found me a somewhat late visitor at the Rantipole Theater, where I felt sure of satisfying my curiosity at once, by merely stepping into the box of those exquisite specimens of affability and omniscience, the Mrs. Arabella and Miranda Cognoscenti. That fine tragedian, Climax, was doing Iago to a very crowded house, and I experienced some little difficulty in making my wishes understood, especially as our box was next the slips, and completely overlooked the stage. "Myth," said Miss Arabella, as she at length comprehended the purport of my query, "Smith? Why, not General John A. B. C. Myth?" inquired Miranda, musingly. "Ah, bless me, did you ever behold a finer figure, ever, madam? But do tell me, are so inimitable grace, ever, upon my word? But pray inform me, are so just an appreciation of stage effect, Adam, are a more delicate sense of the true beauties of Shakespeare? Be so good as to look at that leg, he devil," and I turned again to her sister. "Myth," said she, "why, not General John A. B. C.? Horrid affair that, wasn't it? Great wretches, those bugaboo savage, and so on, but we live in a wonderfully inventive age. Smith. Oh yes. Great man. Perfect desperado, immortal renowned prodigies of valor. Never heard this was given in a scream. Bless my soul. Why, he's the man, mandragora nor all the drowsy syrups of the world, shall ever medicine thee to that sweet sleep which thou outst yesterday." Here roared our Climax just in my ear, and shaking his fist in my face all the time, in a way that I couldn't stand, and I wouldn't. I left the Mrs. Cognoscent I immediately, went behind the scenes forthwith, and gave the beggarly scoundrel such a thrashing as I trust he will remember to the day of his death. At the soiree of the lovely widow, Mrs. Kathleen O'Trump, I was confident that I should meet with no similar disappointment. Accordingly, I was no sooner seated at the card table, with my pretty hostess for a vis-vis, than I propounded those questions the solution of which had become a matter so essential to my peace. "Myth," said my partner, "why, not General John A. B. C.? Horrid affair that, wasn't it? Diamonds, did you say? Terrible wretches those kickapoos. We are playing whist, if you please, Mr. Tattle. However, this is the age of invention, most certainly the age, one may say the age par excellence. Speak French? Oh, quite a hero, perfect desperado. No hearts, Mr. Tattle? Question mark. I don't believe it. Immortal renown and all that, prodigies of valor. Never heard. Why, bless me, he's the man, and Captain Man?" here screamed some little feminine interloper from the farthest corner of the room. "Re you talking about Captain Man and the duel? Oh, I must hear, do tell, go on, Mrs. O'Trump, do now go on, and go on." Mrs. O'Trump did all about a certain Captain Man, who was either shot or hung, or should have been both shot and hung. "Yes, Mrs. O'Trump," she went on, and I went off. There was no chance of hearing anything farther that evening in regard to Brevet Brigadier General John A. B. C. Smith. Still, I consoled myself with the reflection that the tide of ill luck would not run against me forever, and so determined to make a bold push for information at the rout of that bewitching little angel, the graceful Mrs. Pirouette. "Myth," said Mrs. P., as we twirled about together in a pause de zephyr, "Smith? Why, not General John A. B. C.? Dreadful business that of the bugaboos, wasn't it? Dreadful creatures, those Indians, do turn out your toes. I really am ashamed of you, man of great courage, poor fellow, but this is a wonderful age for invention. Oh dear me, I'm out of breath, quite a desperado, prodigies of valor, never heard, can't believe it. I shall have to sit down and enlighten you, Smith. Why, he's the man, and Fred, I tell you," here bawled out Miss Boz Blue, as I led Mrs. Pirouette to a seat. "Did ever anybody hear the like? It's Man Fred, I say, and not at all by any means Man Friday." Here Miss Boz Blue beckoned to me in a very peremptory manner. and I was obliged, will I nill I, to leave Mrs. P. for the purpose of deciding a dispute touching the title of a certain poetical drama of Lord Byron's. Although I pronounced, with great promptness, that the true title was Man Friday, and not by any means Man Fred, yet when I returned to seek Mrs. Pirouette she was not to be discovered, and I made my retreat from the house in a very bitter spirit of animosity against the whole race of the Bosblues. Matters had now assumed a really serious aspect, and I resolved to call at once upon my particular friend, Mr. Theodore Sinovate, for I knew that here at least I should get something like definite information. Smith, said he, in his well-known peculiar way of drawling out his syllables, Smith? Why, not General John A. B. C. Savage affair that with the Kakapo-O-O-Os, wasn't it? Say, don't you think so? Perfect despair, a do great pity, pon my honor, wonderfully inventive age, pro-o-odigies of valor. By the by, did you ever hear about Captain Maya A.N., Captain Manby D.D. said I please to go on with your story? Oh well. Quite la me cho-o-os as we say in France. Smith, eh? Brigadier General John A. B. C. Question mark I say, here Mr. S. thought proper to put his finger to the side of his nose, say, you don't mean to insinuate now, really, and truly, unconscientiously, that you don't know all about that affair of Smith's, as well as I do, eh? Smith? John A. B. C. Question mark why, bless me, he's the man, Mr. Sinovate, said I, imploringly, is he the man in the mask, oh, said he, looking wise, nor the man in the mo-o-on. This reply I considered a pointed and positive insult, and so left the house at once in high dudgeon, with a firm resolve to call my friend, Mr. Sinovate, to a speedy account for his ungentlemanly conduct and ill-breeding. In the meantime, however, I had no notion of being thwarted touching the information I desired. There was one resource left me yet. I would go to the fountainhead. I would call forthwith upon the general himself, and demand, in explicit terms, a solution of this abominable piece of mystery. Here, at least, there should be no chance for equivocation. I would be plain, positive, peremptory, as short as pie crust, as concise as Tacitus or Montesquieu. It was early when I called, and the general was dressing, but I pleaded urgent business, and was shown at once into his bedroom by an old negro valet, who remained in attendance during my visit. As I entered the chamber, I looked about, of course, for the occupant, but did not immediately perceive him. There was a large, and exceedingly odd-looking bundle of something which lay close by my feet on the floor, and, as I was not in the best humor in the world, I gave it a kick out of the way. Rather civil that, I should say, set the bundle, in one of the smallest, and altogether the funniest little voices, between a squeak and a whistle, that I ever heard in all the days of my existence. Rather civil that, I should observe. I fairly shouted with terror, and made off, at a tangent, into the farthest extremity of the room. Ah, bless me, my dear fellow, here again whistled the bundle, why, what is the matter? I really believe you don't know me at all. What could I say to all this, what could I? I staggered into an armchair, and, with staring eyes and open mouth, awaited the solution of the wonder. Strange you shouldn't know me though, isn't it? Presently re-squeaked the nondescript, which I now perceived was performing, upon the floor, some inexplicable evolution, very analogous to the drawing on of a stocking. There was only a single leg, however, apparent. Strange you shouldn't know me though, isn't it? Pompey, bring me that leg. Here Pompey handed the bundle, a very capital cork leg, already dressed, which it screwed on in a trice, and then it stood up before my eyes. And a bloody action it was, continued the thing, as if in a soliloquy, but then one mustn't fight with the Bugaboos and Kickapoos, and think of coming off with a mere scratch. Pompey, I'll thank you now for that arm. Thomas, turning to me, is decidedly the best hand at a cork leg. But if you should ever want an arm, my dear fellow, you must really let me recommend you to Bishop. Here Pompey screwed on an arm. He had rather hot work of it, that you may say. Now, you dog, slip on my shoulders and bosom. Pettit makes the best shoulders, but for a bosom you will have to go to Ducro. Awesome, said I, Pompey, will you never be ready with that wig? Scalping is a rough process after all, but then you can procure such a capital scratch at Delorme's. Cratch, ow, you nigger, my teeth. For a good set of these you had better go to Parmley's at once. High prices, but excellent work. I swallowed some very capital articles, though, when the big bugaboo rammed me down with the butt end of his rifle. Butt end? Ram down my eye, yes, by the by, my eye here, Pompey, you scamp, screw it in exclamation point. Those kickapoos are not so very slow at a gouge, but he's a belied man, that Dr. Williams, after all. You can't imagine how well I see with the eyes of his make. I now began very clearly to perceive that the object before me was nothing more nor less than my new acquaintance, Brevet Brigadier General John A. B. C. Smith. The manipulations of Pompey had made, I must confess, a very striking difference in the appearance of the personal man. The voice, however, still puzzled me no little. But even this apparent mystery was speedily cleared up. Pompey, you black rascal, squeaked the general, I really do believe you would let me go out without my pallet. Hereupon, the negro, grumbling out an apology, went up to his master, opened his mouth with the knowing air of a horse jockey, and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.